Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours. Today, we're plunging into the realm of marketing automation. It's a space that can often feel like a mixed bag. It's either incredibly effective or utterly impersonal. There's this ongoing battle of engaging with customers while still trying to keep up with the digital age and be as efficient as possible. And let's be honest, it's not just about hitting the buy button. It's about that post-purchase glow, that lingering connection, and of course, the repeat business. So get ready, listeners. We're about to unravel the secrets of harnessing automation for loyalty and connection. And let's introduce today's guest, Guy.
Yeah, so today, ladies and gents, we've got a real treat for you all. We're having a chat with Lauren Pastana, who's Director of Brand Marketing at Drip, a company that's really, truly reshaping the e-commerce world by prioritizing relationships over sales. I'm up for that. Lauren, it's really great to have you with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Now, we often hit our guests with some hot takes towards the end of the podcast, but I've got one that I want to throw at you right now, because although we're email after hours, somehow we often end up talking about music on this show as well. So I want to ask you, you know, do you have a specific song, a really like favorite song that just absolutely describes your day job, your day-to-day activities at Drip?
Yeah, Guy, I would say Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls by TLC would be, one of my go-to songs in general, but how I would describe day-to-day. So a little explanation into that. I think marketers often have a tendency to go after one channel after the next, after the next, after the next. And it's really about sticking with like, what are your hero channels or your hero mediums. So you don't go chasing waterfalls, just stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to.
Wow, that's good. I mean, I'm older school than you. I think if anyone asked me the same question, it'd probably be Van Halen going, might as well jump, but we'll save that for another day. Okay, let's put the musical anecdotes to one side and jump into today's conversation.
It's a perfect segue, though, Lauren. Talk to us about Drip's marketing ethos. Can you shed some light on your in-house marketing strategy and tell us how your program stands out in this really saturated digital landscape? What sets Drip apart?
I think above everything else, Drip is just very human. I think if you look at like every other marketing automation website out there, they kind of have the same colors, the same fonts, the same designs. Everything just looks the same. All the copy sounds the same. It's just like kind of copy paste from one website to the next. And I think the thing with Drip is like, even just reading the website, you feel like you're, oh, I'm actually talking to someone. This is actually a real person that I can kind of relate to. And I think just like everything down to like the colors, and that it's so different than everything out there. And of course, like a brand is not just like colors and copy and design and all of that. It's so much more than that. Like, I think if you really boil it down to every single interaction that somebody has with the Drip brand, so everything from like sales to customer success to customer support, writing in and chat, like everything about us, and we have made sure of it from like every single person you talk to, you're just talking to a human. So I think that really sets us apart from everybody else in this space. And it's a crowded space, believe me.
And sort of building on that, I mean, it's one of those well-known marketing truths that it costs 5 times more to acquire a new customer than it does to retain an existing one. So bearing that in mind, do you think there's a real role for automation in terms of supporting that, you know, sort of maximizing and prioritizing retention over acquisition?
Absolutely. There's a big place for automation in that piece. You know, something we always preach to our customers, it's kind of like the Pareto principle. There's, you know, 20% of your audience is getting you, 80% of your audience is focusing in on that audience that are your, like, your champions, your super customers. And you know, really marketing to those people, you know, cross-selling, upselling to that audience, obviously it's really about finding that audience. But once you boil down to who that audience is, it's all about, you know, remarketing to those customers. And, you know, maybe there's referral programs that you can set up to get more out of those customers. But yeah, there's definitely a place for automation in that. Like one of the things that is super important on the e-commerce side for is like a post-purchase series. So most people will just send like a like really bland automation, like, hey, we've received your order, you're going to get it soon, or a really bland shipping confirmation, like your order is out to ship. But like you can take those little moments that are generally very transactional and make them like super awesome and personal. And those things are what's going to like set you apart from everybody else out there and get you more return purchases and customers.
Guy and I have certainly encountered email programs that have implemented automation in a way that does somehow seem impersonal. It just does not hit the mark. And impersonal messaging these days, it is like the opposite of what every marketer is trying to achieve. So where does the balance lie when it comes to automation and building a one-to-one relationship between brand and subscriber?
I think that you have to really know your audience. You have to really know them to be able to speak to them. And I think that you have to continue thinking of like these moments in the journey of like, make sure that you're matching that up to the message that you're sending out. Like you really, so I guess twofold, you have to know your audience well. You have to know the customer journey really well. It's really easy to set up like email flows and kind of set and forget and then just be like, okay, I did it. I did my automation. But like you have to continue working at that. You have to continue monitoring all your metrics. So like, okay, are people reading this email? Are they unsubscribing when they read this email? Like those kind of like health metrics will give you a good gauge of like, okay, is this actually resonating with people? Or is this just something I'm batching and blasting out?
You know, you make a really good point there because, you know, customer journeys aren't static, they're dynamic. And over a period of time, they change, people's needs and interests change, marketers need to respond to those changes. So as you say, you know, when you set up an automated program, it's easy to set and forget, but they do need to be revisited once in a while to make sure that they're still relevant and doing what they're supposed to do. Do you have any guidance in terms of how often that revisiting should be taking place?
Yeah, I think it really depends on your business, honestly. But again, I would just make sure you're looking at those health metrics. So be looking at unsubscribes, be looking at are people reading your email? Actually, there's a metric that I'm really fond of that's like, okay, like how much time did they spend reading the email, which is actually really nice. I look at that to see like, okay, is this resonating with people? And if it's not, then it's time to really revisit and look at your emails again. And of course, like if you have, you know, if something big at the company changes, if you change your positioning or you have like a major product release or something like that, you're obviously going to want to go in and probably check and change those things as well. But yeah, so something big at the company happens, big changes, or if there's, you know, your health metrics are not looking great on your emails, those are the times to for sure go in. But other than that, I would look at them like maybe once a quarter, even if there's nothing jumping out to you, just look at them once a quarter and just see what's going on there.
Dwell time, that's how long are they actually spending on the message? Definitely. I know that that comes up really frequently in our client conversations at Validity. So I love calling that out as a metric. I think it's often a forgotten one.
Yes.
And maybe I'm just speaking for myself here. Hopefully I'm not outing my own mailbox, but subscriber mailboxes are filled with automated messages. We've got transactional emails like purchase receipts or loyalty status updates, or even maybe not regularly sent triggers, but like privacy policy updates and terms and conditions emails. How can marketers make sure that their automated emails stand out?
I think like have fun with those emails. Like just because they're like kind of boring and kind of transactional, have fun with them. Like have a fun subject line. Of course it has to fit in with your brand. Like if you're like a super like buttoned up brand, it's going to be weird if you have like a super over the top, like fun email. But I would say have fun with those emails, you know, like we've used gifts and like real life pictures of people that actually work at Drip, like in those emails. And I think just because they seem like a boring type of email doesn't mean that they have to be a boring email.
I think that's right. I mean, personally, one of my favorite email programs is like an Onbox novel. It's an online novelty store called Farbox. And you buy from them and their transactional emails come through those purchase conversations and they're awesome. It's like, you know, guy, you've just made such a cool purchase. I'm sure you're itching to receive it. You just think, that's it. You've nailed the language. 2023 has been the year of artificial intelligence. We were out at Salesforce's Dreamforce event last week. And if anyone hadn't got the memo yet, they certainly will have by the time they'd finished. You know, it was like the headline story of every interview Mark Benioff did. It was the core theme of every presentation at the show. So relevant to today's conversation, how's AI being harnessed for better automation of email campaigns?
You know, I think that AI is obviously this thing that everybody's talking about. And I think it's incredibly important. Marketers are so short on resources, so short on time often, that it can be a really helpful tool for marketers. It can help you, like, for example, write copy for an entire email without even like doing anything. But I think it's also incredibly crucial for us to use AI as a guide and not have it as like Bible. Like, it is a guide. You still have to, because again, back to the being human thing, like being human is what's going to set your brand apart. If you have a generic kind of AI approach to your marketing, you're not going to stand out as human.
Being human fueled by the robot.
Right. become more efficient with AI, but then like add the human touch to it. That's what I will say about AI. I think we're just going to continue to see more and more and more of it. And it's super awesome. And it's really interesting. But yeah, be human.
Yeah. And I think too, just to add on to that, because when we talk about AI, especially with automated messages, everybody's trying to personalize, right? Mm-hmm. To make sure that those messages are one-to-one, which is more than just you bought this item. Or something like a transactional type triggered message. And I don't know, this is kind of off the cuff, but have you found that AI is improving automated messages personalization?
I don't know that I would say it's improving the personalization. I mean, I think in certain ways, yes. Like, I think in certain ways, yes, it is improving personalization. But again, I think that like AI is a place to start, and then you have to polish it with the human touch.
And when we talk about measuring success for automated campaigns, you've touched on a couple key KPIs, right? So we want to look at maybe our read time or our dwell time, as well as unsubscribe rates. But naturally, there are different measures of success for automated campaigns versus your standard, like large promotional campaign that's been crafted or maybe is like time sensitive. So when we're looking at KPIs for automated messages, how does that differ from what we're looking for traditionally with promotional messages, or does it differ?
I think it really depends on like what the automation is. For example, this is again back to e-commerce, but if you're sending like the welcome emails, those typically are like the most opened of any automated messages because this person has just signed up for the brand and they like it's top of mind for them. You know, that you're going to get more opens, more clicks in those types of emails because like that person is just signing up for this and they're super excited. I think if you're looking at also same thing, if you're like, if it's like the transactional type emails where it's like directly post-purchase, like those things are going to get really high engagement as well. So you have to have like different metrics for those than you do. Like, for example, like if you have like a re-engagement campaign, like if there's somebody you haven't seen in a while and you're trying to like re-engage them, that's going to have completely different metrics than like the welcome or the post-purchase email is. It really depends on what the actual automation is that you're looking at in order to set your metrics. I know that's not really an answer. It's kind of like it depends answer.
But what you're saying too is it's not conversions necessarily, right? So it might be it highly dependent on the message. So
yeah,
welcome, maybe that's confirmation or site traffic. after that, or for re-engagement, perhaps it's simply a click. So definitely it seems like there's some variance there from your standard, you know, bigger holiday promotional campaigns, which is all I'm thinking about right now. Right. So early.
Yeah, it depends on the goal of like the actual automation itself. So are you trying to get somebody to a conversion? Is it like a super bottom of funnel thing? Are you just trying to like get somebody to your website? Are you just like alerting them? Like, it depends on what your goal is. And then it depends on like where that person is in their customer journey as well. Like how, like, are you expecting them to be engaged because they just signed up for your brand or they just made a purchase? Or have you not heard from them in 6 months? You're going to have different metrics for that.
For sure. Now, while we were preparing for today's conversation, we saw something in your own thought leadership at Drip that we are quite curious about, because you talk about the e-commerce rebellion, and that struck a chord with us. But What does it actually mean? You know, is it a real thing, or is it just a catchy phrase? You got a story or an anecdote you can share with us that brings the e-commerce rebellion to life for our listeners?
Is with Shopify out there in the space right now, anybody can go from kind of like the American dream. Anybody can go from like their mom's basement in Milwaukee selling hand soaps to being like the next biggest hand soap seller in like the country. It's a little bit of the American dream. Whereas like maybe 30 years ago, you know, you would go to Walmart and there's a choice of like four different brands and you're going to just choose one of those brands because that's what you have available to you. Now with the power of like the e-commerce rebellion and with Shopify and all of that, like empowering small businesses to become a well-recognized brand, that's something that we've never seen before. And myself personally, I've been in the e-commerce space now for like 10 years. I've witnessed people go from like maybe making like $5,000 a month in their business to like millions of dollars a year, and just in a short time span as well. So That's what the e-commerce rebellion is about. And yeah, it's really exciting to see.
And as with most rebellions or revolutions, it's like a sign of the times too, right? I feel like small businesses have been touted and really making a comeback too, especially after COVID, right? And as we think about the impact that big brick and mortar, like chains like a Walmart or whatever, have on the environment and stuff like that. So I love that.
I'm up for being rebellious. Sign me up.
Yeah, that's Guy Rebellion Hansen, as everybody knows him. And I do have another e-commerce question here, which is that, I guess, in your opinion, are there challenges that are unique to e-commerce email marketing programs that maybe don't exist for other businesses?
I think the thing with e-commerce, there's really two big problems at hand. There's one driving a first purchase and one driving a second, third, fourth, and beyond, you know, repeat purchase. So with the first purchase, it's incredibly hard to get somebody to do that. It's a very competitive space. And today with acquisition just becoming that much more expensive, like, you really have to make the most to get that first purchase. I will emphasize the importance on retention so much in that space, because we talked about how expensive acquisition is. You really need to focus on that retention and getting those like 20% of people that are getting you 80% of the revenue, and just continuing to upsell and cross-sell those folks, because it's going to be much more cost efficient at the end of the day. And they're much more likely to actually buy your product if they've known it and loved it and maybe shared it with their friends as well.
100%. Now, this has been such a great conversation about marketing automation, but we try and keep our email after hours episode short and snappy. So we're going to have to start wrapping up, and we love to finish with a couple more quick fire questions for you. So mine, just to put you on the spot, you know, we spent the last 20 minutes talking about how great marketing automation is, but it can go wrong occasionally. And do you have to mind an example of, you know, your favorite email automation fail?
I can't think of one off of the top of my head, but I will say that those opportunities, while they may feel like really awful in the moment, if you have like a really bad automation fail, turn that into a really good marketing opportunity after that. Like, It's really important, and I've seen it happen a million times. Don't beat yourself up over it, because you can turn it into a really good opportunity.
That's such a great answer. And I can see Danielle smiling. You're going to be good friends of ours, because when was it, Danielle? 2 episodes ago that we were talking about our favorite email mistakes and what a great opportunity they are. So welcome to the club.
That's
we're with
right.
you there.
Yep, you're speaking our language, Lauren, the oops language.
Oops, I did it again.
And I just want to throw in a little random story, because this isn't really an automation fail, but it is like a cautionary tale, I guess. So I once received an email from a travel company it's a Canadian travel company, and it was a receipt for a purchase of a flight that I did not make. So it just so, and I thought for sure this is a scam or this is some sort of spam, don't click, whatever. I went to the website and logged in, and lo and behold, there was, a purchase made using my email address. It was a real booking. So even though we're talking about like automation emails here, programmatically, send those welcomes, send a confirmation email, people. Make sure that your subscribers, very most, their very basic level, their email address is the right one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was a bit of a wild one. Anyway, I also have a closing question for you, Lauren. And it's because I'm always looking for red flags in my own mailbox, and because I'm now scrutinizing every email I receive with the deliverability consultant lens. What is your biggest email marketing red flag? Like when you receive an email, what's a big red flag that something's gone wrong?
I have so many.
Do we need another episode?
Yeah, that could be a whole episode. I think just like, knowing so much about email, one is if I just signed up for like an email list and the first day I get like 8 emails from that company. It's just like, I can't imagine what their unsubscribe rates must be. Like just, signing up and immediately getting that many emails from a brand. Like you just don't want to do that. Like it's just not a good idea.
Nah, for sure.
I think coming on strong like that is a red flag in multiple different venues.
Even
those
marketing is a little
on strong
bit like
Dave. Programs. They remind me of my Staffordshire Bull Terrier puppy when I get home from a day at work, and like it runs around your feet in circles, like trying to lick you, and it's a little bit what they feel like.
But not
this has been such a great conversation. And Lauren Pastana, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been brilliant, and I think our listeners are going to take so much out of it. We really appreciate it. So to sign off to our listeners, we'll be back again in 2 weeks, as always. And we've got a great conversation lined up with Lola Gandara from Jones Lang LaSalle. And we spend a lot of time talking about best practices, but sometimes you need to be a little bit pragmatic as well. And from an email point of view, we're going to be riffing on the idea of, you don't always have to let great be the enemy of good. It's going to be a good conversation. Join them. Bye for now. Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours, and see you next time.